Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I've been on vacation a little bit for about 2 weeks now, and I'm glad to be back on Blog Talk. Tonight we have with us Ms. Tori J. Evans. She is the founder of the Fatherless Generation Foundation. Good afternoon, Ms. Evans. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
I am okay. It's good to have you on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be on.
I'm happy to have you. We're first going to talk about the first question is probably that the listeners are probably going to want to know. What was the original motivation for starting the Fatherless Generation Foundation?
Well, just a little background on myself. You know, I grew up in a single-parent home, and in growing up in that single-parent home, you realize, you know, this is the norm, especially when you're growing up at a time when I did, where there were people around me who had fathers and two-parent homes, and I knew there was something going on with that. And as I, you know, grew up and, you know, there are family members who have similar situations to mine, so you weren't panicked about it, but you knew it was different and it was not something that was easy for your mother and things like that. But there came a point when I was 31 years old when I went seeking for my father and found him. And in that process, I realized that there are other children out there, such as myself, who would love to know who their fathers are or have that time with their father that maybe they didn't have growing up, as well as their children who are growing up right now in single-parent homes who need to navigate through that and alleviate some of the stress they're feeling and some of the things that they're dealing with, obstacles and battles, and they need to learn how to overcome those things because they're going to be there. And that's one of the main reasons and motivations behind me starting the Fatherless Generation Foundation, as I have.
Okay. What is the Fatherless Generation, do for people? What does the foundation do?
Well, what we have set out to do, mission and vision-wise, you know, that grows with everything, but I definitely am now in the phase of fulfilling the first phase of what it is that we've intended to do, which is we provide, I would say, if we just stated in a quick sentence or mission statement, we heal the broken places the fatherless experience has created. So how we heal children is we do that through several different programs and services. That's peer groups and Boys and Girls Clubs here in Metro Atlanta, where we take them through obstacle courses that teaches them how to overcome those obstacles you're talking about, stress management to help alleviate stress. We teach them life skills and character building exercises, as well as teach them how to journal where they can write down some of the things that they're feeling and know that no one's going to read it unless they allow them to. Then we also have a husband and wife teen mentor program, which helps children see the two-parent home dynamic, because growing up in a single-parent home, many times we didn't eat at the dinner table. We probably did on a Sunday, but during the week that's not something that was normal in my home. And I wanted to make sure that the children were able to do some of the things that they should be able to do in a two-parent home, as well as see the dynamic of a husband and wife and how they work together, so that when they became adults, they could know what that looks like. So many people are in these dysfunctional relationships and dysfunctional marriages because they have no idea what a two-parent home looks like or what it's supposed to function, how it's supposed to function. And so we created husband and wife mentor teams. We have tutoring here through the Atlanta Public Library System at Buckhead Library, as well as the Central Library. We have emergency financial assistance, which can help you with utilities, referrals to get food, or rental issues that you have, whether that's I can't pay my bill or I'm looking for a place, you know, or I can't pay my rent and I'm looking for a place to live or something like that, I'm being evicted. We help through some of those processes, as well as we reengage biological fathers who've been absent. And so that's the helm of what we do, which I love because that's what created this in the first place for me, is finding my own dad. And we've currently done 37 of those and looking to do many more. And so those are the things that we do here in Atlanta. We have recreational events where people can come and have fun and different fundraisers and things like that as well. But those are the services and programs that we provide.
So is that overall 37 people, or is that just in the Atlanta area?
That we re-engaged back to their children?
That you've re-engaged back to the children, 37 people.
Mm-hmm. Now,
okay.
We have 1,300 children in the program, and we have 162 now who are in our husband-wife team mentor program. But we've done 37 re-engagements so far.
Okay, all right. What is the primary example of a kid or youth without a father? What would be the primary... Let me see if I can rephrase this. What would be the primary example of what a kid or youth without a father would experience?
It depends on, you know, I hate to say it like this, but it depends on what side of the coin they're on. Are they a child who has never met their father? Because there are four different categories of growing up fatherless. One being, I've never met my father, and so therefore I'm fatherless because I don't even know who he is. Number two, my parents are divorced or separated, or my dad, you know, my mother and father were never married, but my dad comes and gets me, you know, every other weekend or once a month or whatever. He's around, but he doesn't live in the home with me. Then you have my father sits on the couch, but there's no emotional bond between us. And then you have the fourth one, which is my dad has died, and I'm now therefore fatherless. So it depends on which side of that, the whole fatherless situation you're on, but you can have individuals who are, as the statistics say, who are dropping out of high school at a crazy rate, those who are becoming sexually active at a younger rate. You have high crime rates, and so often we look at society and the things that are going on, and we pin it on one thing, which happens to be really the fruit, and it's not the root of the situation. And in most cases, what's happening to the youth is more and more of them are growing up fatherless. I mean, you got 70 to 72% of African Americans who are growing up fatherless. And if you just look around at some of the things that are happening within our community, on TV, in our neighborhoods, you know, in the newspapers, all of that, you can see that there's something that is falling apart, and it's genuinely falling apart, and no one's putting it back together. And you have 40% of all households that are growing up fatherless. And I just had a conversation at the pool earlier where a young lady, she's from Romania. And this is interesting because this is not just something that's happening in Atlanta. This is not something that's just happening in the United States. This is a global issue, and we keep ignoring it. But she grew up in Romania, and she's a Romanian pop star. And she sells lots of albums, and she's here recording her album. And she was at the pool with a friend, and they asked me to come down, and we were all talking. And she said that she would have no problem having children or adopting a child without having a father involved because she saw her mother do it and it was just fine. And then, you know, shortly after she, you know, when we were talking about other things, she was divulging the fact that she did grow up in a single-parent home. But before she even let that out, there were things she was saying, and I was like, wow, why does she think a woman can do it by herself? But she finally said, my mother did it by herself. And I think that is one of the biggest fallacies that we are walking under at this stage. So many people see their mothers raising them solo, and so they think men are not necessary. And so you have a lot of young girls who are looking for the love of the father, and so they'll have a child to find that and get that love. When they find they have the child, they realize that there's so much more to this. And so they're thinking, I don't need a man. My mother didn't have a man. And just the concepts and the things that the youth are thinking and believing, unfortunately, a lot of that comes from the absence of their father because the father is not there to instill their identity. So they're looking for it in gangs. And maybe it's not that severe. They're looking for it in things that they see on TV or in magazines, and it creates, you know, dysfunction or disorder within their lives. And we have to figure out how to get men reengaged in a way that is functional for both him and the mother of the child but most of all for me, the child, because I'm not, as I tell people all the time, I'm not here for the mother and the father. I get that. I'm giving a voice to the children, and that's my plight, period.
Okay.
So,
giving a voice to the children.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's nothing wrong with that. Is incarceration one of the main causes of fathers not being in the home? Have you found that incarceration is one of the main factors?
I won't say the main, but it is one. I mean, they're 20 times more likely to end up in prison, and in our time in a jail here in Atlanta, who I believe the number was, they have 45,000 inmates that come in and out in a 12-month cycle. 75% of them were between the ages of 18 and 22, and 85% of those were fatherless. And so when you have that kind of dynamic, you can't ignore the fact that, hello, these young men are in here based on some of the choices they've made because they didn't have the right person steering them and guiding them to do the right things and to live a certain way. You know, in a utopia, we believe that fathers would teach them the right way. You know, in a perfect world, a father would do that. I'm not saying that in every situation a father has taught their child the right way, because we know and heard of certain situations where fathers have led their children down the wrong path and they still ended up in jail. But in a perfect world, when a father is doing what God the Father would have them to do, this would not be an issue. And we have to figure out how to navigate our communities, our, you know, our youth within our church, even the adults. That's the other piece that I don't think we realize. A lot of these adults are parenting broken because they grew up in fatherless homes, and you have to calculate that into the equation.
So my question was, do you think the men, the fathers, are not in the home, not the children themselves? Is incarceration one of the primary factors that the men are not in the home with their children? Is that one of them?
It is one of them. It is. Okay. I would say high school dropout is probably at the top of the list to me. But they're 20% more likely to end up in prison. That's a high number.
Okay.
The high number.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is the second factor finances? Do you think the second factor would be financial?
Is why the children are in prison? Is that what you're asking? Or
no,
what?
Why the children are fathers. Do you think the fathers are not there with the children because of incarceration and also because of finance? Or is it just...
No. Let me... And I get your question now. I get it now. Because your first question you're really asking me is, are the children fatherless because their fathers are incarcerated? That's what you're asking me, correct?
Yes.
And then you're asking me, is it because the men don't have enough money? No. Children are fatherless because, I hate to say this, and women email me and get on me, but I have met so many men through this journey, and I can tell you 85 to 90% of them would be involved, but there's a woman on the other side who's doing a lot of blocking. She's doing a lot of things to alienate the child from their father, and it is creating a dynamic that the man does not want to deal with. Have you ever known of a situation where a man has children on one side of the town that he sees, he doesn't see at all, and he has nothing to do with them, and then he has the children and a wife and a family on the other side of town, and he takes care of them completely and totally? Have you ever seen that or heard of that dynamic before?
Yes. I was one of those children.
You were one of those children. Okay.
Yes.
And so when you see that, a lot of times there is something going on with the mother of the children that he does not see, that he can't deal with. And each situation is something totally different. But, and I'm not giving anybody a pass. I'm just telling you, either it's how they argue or how they communicate. I've seen situations where it's the pettiest of things. Oh, he cheated on me, so I'm not even bothering with that. Or, you know, she did this, and so I can't deal with her. And then you have situations that are just as simple as he just doesn't know how to fight the system.
Okay.
He doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't, and the system creates such a fear that when he thinks about child support or he thinks about going to court, he's frozen. He's paralyzed.
Okay.
And so that's what you see more than anything. I think incarcerations are real, and there are a lot of men in jail, a lot of African-American men in jail.
Yes.
And poverty is real as well. But I wasn't impoverished growing up, and can I say if my dad had a lot of money, that I don't know. But I think when you put the money factor in there, that's when you – I just had a conversation this morning with a dear friend I talk to every day, and I didn't know, although we talk every day, I did not know that he had not gone to court concerning custody or child support with his children. I knew that the ex-wife had cheated, and now she's married the man that she cheated on him with, and she was doing a lot of things to alienate him from his children. And I couldn't understand why he was playing along with the game until this morning, until he finally told me, well, we've never been to court, Taurus. I've never gone through child support because the judge who's on my case doesn't like me, and I would be paying way more than what I'm paying now, and I wouldn't have anywhere to live if I went to court. And he pays a lot more than most people I know. And so I think that's the interesting point in the dynamic that keeps men away. It's not the lack of money, but it's the fear of the lack of money.
The fear of the lack of money, not the lack of money.
Yeah, where am I
going to
live?
Where's my money?
And I know men who haven't paid, and they can't. And they go to jail.
Okay.
But those are men who've been to court. You see what I'm saying?
All right. Okay.
It's unfortunate because those men are doing the best that they can because they actually went to court and made it a legitimate situation, and they lose their jobs or whatever. And then if they don't pay, they still can't see their children. And that, to me, is it about money? Are our children all, is it just all about money? And I get that it costs money to take care of children. I get that. But if he can't pay,
all right.
What good is it to keep him away from the one that really needs him? Because he can't.
The child. The child really needs it. Yes, the children.
The child needs him. And him not paying, and you keeping him away from the child isn't getting him closer to paying. It's crazy to me.
No, it's not. It's not getting them any closer to paying by not letting them see their children, plus they're not paying money out. That's true.
Yeah.
All right.
It's the game.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right, listeners, we're going to go to break. We have with us Ms. Tori J. Evans with the Fatherless Generation Foundation. We're going to go to break and pay some bills, and then we're going to come back and finish talking to Ms. Evans.
An at-risk youth is defined by statute as a child under the age of 18 who meets at least one of the following three requirements: is absent from home for at least 70 consecutive hours without parental consent, or is beyond parental control such that his/her behavior endangers the health, safety, or welfare of the child or any other person, has a substance abuse problem for which there are no pending criminal charges relating to the substance abuse. At Camp Penny, we have found that at-risk youth struggles with complex issues and scenarios that are brought on by peers, mentors, family members, and difficult social environments. Camp Penny understands the increased complexity of today's at-risk youth. As on parents, Camp Penny works with nonprofits and federal agencies to find solutions. Today's youth are exposed to a variety of negatives, making them more at risk to injury, academic failure, and poor health. Teens who are likely to be more at risk are usually those that do not have a strong support system at home and in the community, as well as teens who are not coping well with the different challenges that they are facing. So what sorts of programs will Camp Penny have? Camp Penny will provide outdoor activities as a main feature of the camp. There is no sitting around getting bored at Camp Penny. The girls will eat a well-balanced and healthy diet, then get outside for some well-planned and highly beneficial programs. Just the Camp Penny location is a real boost for our children. The beauty of nature may not have previously registered with many city-bound kids. out in the wilderness, the teens get to commune with nature, observe the wildlife, and tackle challenging physical tasks. That will build their self-confidence and their muscles. If you would like to help or become a volunteer of the Camp Penny Project, please contact us at climb@camppenny.org. Let's save our daughters.
When you're searching for the latest news on entertainment, the economy, business, technology, and creative arts, choose
the Digital Conglomerate Magazine.
Not only do they give you all the latest information, but they're there for you 24/7, baby, giving you the 411 and all you need to know, baby. Visit the Digital Conglomerate Magazine online. Just Google us, baby. We're everywhere. Let's get down to business. So you're having that company function or business function, and you need the proper services to get that business menu pumped. Okay, here's the solution. Call Exquisite Barista Services. Exquisite Barista Services has the experience to create a signature beverage for your business or organization. Services also include barista training, custom beverage menu creation, food and beverage pairing, and so much more. Visit Exquisite Barista Services online at www.exquisiteexpressinc.com, or better yet, call 210-701-0143. That's 210-701-0143. Don't take your chances on the other man. Get that grand plan and choose Exquisite Barista Services.
All right, listeners, that was some of our advertisers. Let's not forget Power of the V by author John Watts. Let's not also, do not forget also Butterfly Cosmetic. That's April Smith Holtz Company. That's www.butterflycosmetics.com. All right, listeners, we have with us tonight, we have with us Tori J. Evans. Ms. Evans is on Show Talk with Angela Butler. All right. Ms. Evans.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Adversities and trials that children who are fatherless go through. What do you think children who are fatherless go through? Now, I know, and you may know, but there are some people who may not get it.
Mm-hmm.
So could you explain a little bit what adversity and trials the children who are fatherless go through?
Well, if we just go, you know, down the statistics that are out there, and we can, you know, generally say 75% of fatherless children drop out of high school. They're 20 times more likely to be incarcerated. They're 10 times more likely to be involved in teenage suicides. They are 5 times more likely to have mental disorders. Those things we can go down, you know, and you can find those on, you know, the internet and different things like that. But when it comes to my own life, which I think, you know, when you're talking about being fatherless, causes people to get it more when they're talking to someone and they can say, oh, that's what she's dealt with. I mean, I was molested at 12, and that took a lot of different things, took me through a lot of different things, but more than anything, it took me through a lot of different changes with my own mother and questioning her ability and her capability and questioning, you know, making me question my own security and protection in this world. And when you have things like that, it causes you to, either you're going to go by the wayside or you're going to become an overachiever. And I think in some ways I became an overachiever. And you just kind of go with that. But there are a million different things that kids go through. Mentally, they question whether or not they're loved. I have a lot of kids in my program who are genuinely concerned about their parents and whether or not their parents love them. One little boy, he cried one day and said, if my father loved me, he wouldn't have left. And he cried like a baby, balled up into my arms, and he's 9. And that was very difficult for him to even process, although his father came and got them, you know, once a month, sometimes twice a month, and told him that he loved him. He didn't believe it. Because love is in an action, and even a 9-year-old knows that. And so I think more than anything, the question of am I loved is what you deal with more than anything as a fatherless child. And in questioning am I loved, that makes you go looking for it, and you find it. It's just in different ways. I was blessed that I didn't have I had those questions, but I had people around me who kept me from looking for it, or you know, kept me from going out and seeking it in some of the ways that we know to be true in our society now. So yeah, there's a lot of ways that we're impacted in that regard.
You have a master's and a bachelor's degree, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
you're right.
A master's in science and a...
Yes, chemistry. Biochemistry,
okay. You're very intelligent. And a bachelor's in something else.
In chemistry. Yeah.
Chemistry, both on
the I was
going to
go
okay.
be a doctor, and this is the interesting thing about my life. I knew from the time I was probably about 8 that I wanted to be a doctor. And there was nothing you could tell me because I knew I was going to go deliver babies, right?
Okay.
And that's what I knew. And so I was going to school and creating that path just for that. And there came a point where I wasn't enjoying what I was doing, and God called me out, and I went, and ministry became the focus. It became the total focus. And it's like, yeah, you're not going to deliver babies that way. And one of the things that I have told people probably in the last 6 months that I realized was, even as a child, you have an understanding of what you're called to do if you have a connection to God. And most kids have a connection to God because they're not tainted and they don't go through all those different things at such an early age. But I'm 8 years old, I knew. And I think a lot of kids know. You know, you ask kids, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Well, they say those things because those are the things that are, you know, those are finite things. They can that's tangible. So me wanting to be an OBGYN and deliver babies, I believe that was the tangible understanding that I had when I knew that I was
but you
supposed to deliver
babies another
mm-hmm.
way.
Yes, but I now deliver babies in a different way. Exactly. So that was always the understanding. But what it is what I do now is what I was always intended to do. And I deliver babies mm-hmm. who are going through the fatherless experience and dealing with it and healing them from that process. So, yeah.
Yes, and God is going to bless you for that. Does the welfare system, Section 8, in your opinion, in housing in different ways, discourage marriage or at least cause women to stay single? In your opinion, now, give me your honest opinion. When you
No.
Section
8, I will.
You don't think it does?
No, I do. I believe
okay.
that's what originally created the fatherless situation to begin with, because when you look at when welfare was implemented, and if you read the books, you know, it's funny how we as a group of African Americans or as whites, we choose political parties. And I think mm-hmm. to some degree blacks have chosen a political party that has never really had its best interest at hand. It's just appeared as though it has because it gives us handouts. But there's always something or some type of penalty to pay for that handout. And I'm not saying you should be one political party or another. That's not my position. But we seem to follow the political party of Democrats. And in that, Democrats were the ones who really implemented the welfare system. And in implementing that, there were some things that could and could not take place in your home if you received those benefits, and one of them was a man living there. So the man,
yes.
in order to take care of his home, he would move down the street so that could happen, so that you could get a welfare check. And that, to me, is not a good situation at all on any level. That was a man saying, I can't do this, but here's a system that will do it for me and help us through this process or this struggle that we're going through, or this, even for some cases, this moment, and I'm going to move down the street so that this could happen. And a lot of these families never got out of that situation, and so the man never moved back in. And some people can take it as far back as slavery and say men were just used to hopping around and never having to take care of their families. I don't have to go that far back because there was governmental structure put in place to keep you from your family even after you wanted to be there and provide.
Yes, because you get money if you're a single mother, or even
mm-hmm.
a single father, but it's more likely in this day, I'm going to say it's going to be more likely a single mother, about 70% perhaps are single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
You get a check for a certain amount of years, you get food stamps, you get wigs, you get all that stuff, but if the man moves in and he has an income, you lose all those benefits.
All of that.
your rent goes sky high, like $300 or $400, $500 a month. And when you can pay $150, $175, why, you know, you think, I guess this is what the women are thinking, you know, if I can pay $150 a month instead of having to pay $500 or $600, why not? They don't see anything wrong with it. And it's not really the African-American people's fault, Black Americans' people as a whole. It's
not.
It's I don't think it should be cut out, but what I'm saying is I believe that the way the system is set up, it discourages that Black man, the Black father, and the Black husband from being in the Black family, Black American family home. The Section 8, the way it's set up, I don't think it should be outlawed, but I believe they should be able to find a way where they can be in the home and still receive some government assistance instead of alienating them and making them leave.
Yeah, and that's why I said it was probably intended when he moved down the street. It was a moment of, you know, we're having a moment. We're having a financial situation, and so we're going to do this now for this moment, and that moment has lasted much longer than a moment, and the system is not set up to ever get him back into the home. It's not designed
It's not set up to
and
get.
And it should be a way for him to get back in the home and get the job and get them back on their feet without needing the system, but it's not. And that's unfortunate.
And then there's the prison system. And then it's the welfare system. All that is a trap. To me, that's a trap. In my opinion, my honest opinion, that is a trap. All that is some sort of trap because the children are being hurt and the mothers are being hurt and the dads are being hurt. So it's just a vicious cycle that goes round and round and round and round, and it's crazy because the law, the way the law is set up, is hurting people.
Well, I don't think that if we're going to talk about governmental systems at this point, I don't think the governmental systems are concerned about hurt. When you watch different shows and you see who's getting paid for building prisons and the prisons being there, there's money being made hand over fist for people going into prisons. So if we're talking about governmental systems,
it's a form of modern day slavery. I understand that, but and I've said that before, but still, it's destroying. And yes, you're right; they're not concerned.
And there's a reason to destroy. I was reading something because I was studying for the talk show that I do, and I was studying for one of the shows that we were putting together. And we have this wonderfully put-together African-American woman who's strong and beautiful in all of her flair. And the best part about her, so we say, is how independent she is, right? We love that whole philosophy of being an independent woman. And as I was studying about this independent woman and where it came from, you know, I would put things on Facebook and ask people questions while I was going through and studying and wanting the people's opinions so that we could put this stuff on the show. A lot of women have a problem when you say being an independent woman is not a good thing. But when I did the research, I found, you know, Willie Lynch letters, I always thought they were all based around slavery and how to keep a good slave, and they are. But I didn't realize that the independent woman was in the Willie Lynch letters as well. And that blew my mind, because the more you cause a woman to feel like she's independent, that causes her to push a man out. So the Willie Lynch letters put women in, they were saying, in order to keep the union of man and woman, African American, the slave, from becoming unified and pushing, what you do is you destroy the woman's vision or her view of man, of her man or any Black man. And so what you do is you take one and you rip him apart in front of her, like just tear him apart. And then the other one, you beat him, and you beat him to a pulp right in front of her. And what that does is it takes away her sense of security, and so then she begins to believe that she is the only security her child has, and then she trains her children that way.
Huh? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's what, when you see, when a mother sees her husband, her fiancé going to be put in jail, or sent to prison, or goes to court, that's the same thing as slave
system.
That's the same prison, when a, like I'll say this again, listeners, and I know you're listening, when a woman sees her husband being put in jail or sent to prison, that's the same way our ancestors, the slaves, saw things.
Yep. And so then you train your children.
It's psychological. You train your children that you are the strong one. You're the ones that
your
we're
girls,
the ones
yeah,
that have to rely on.
Yeah, your girls said that you train your girls to be independent and you can't rely on a man, and then you train your boys to be weaker so that they're never put in a position where they will be singled out and ripped apart. And so when we look at our society, there's a lot of, unfortunately, there's some weak men out here because they bought into the lie. And there's some women who are overpowering and overbearing and way too strong and independent. And I can be guilty of that myself. And I have to find myself stepping back and allowing the help and the person to come in and be who they need to be for me. But, yes,
okay.
It's just a different system.
How do you feel about mothers receiving all the credit as fathers and mothers?
I don't believe that that's a good thing. because a woman cannot be a mother and a father. God didn't create us that way. You can be the best possible mother you can be. But it goes into, I was the only woman on this panel about a year ago. And it was a male panel, and they wanted to discuss very much so what you and I are discussing right now, the system and all of those things that go along with it. And one lady in the discussion stood up and said, you know, when my son doesn't do what he needs to do, I yell at him, I get up in his face, I tell him he needs to do his homework, and I'm growling at him. Sometimes I even hit him in the chest. And the men were anxiously trying to answer, and I was as well. And they yielded to me to allow me to answer because I think they had confidence that I was going to say the right thing. And clearly I did because they all applauded. But as a woman, we think we know how men would react and how they would raise their children, but a man never raises his voice like that when it comes to his kids. It can happen if it's something crazy. But when a father walks into the room, everybody's chill. Everybody gets it together. He didn't have to raise his voice and be on his chest. That's what we think men do. Do you see what I'm saying? As women, that's what we have become, trying to become this man and this woman all in one. And what you're teaching your child, especially a male child, women,
I'm laughing,
I hope you're listening,
you're right.
What you're teaching them is to allow a woman to get up in his face. What you're teaching them is how to tolerate that and take that from a woman. And that is not a good thing. That's not an acceptable thing. And if your daughter sees that, what you teach her is how to do that to another man. We've got this thing all wrong. We've got it all wrong. And it, once again, it's no disrespect to women who are having to play, you know, in a sense, both roles. I just don't think that you can. Why not just let God be the father? And because that was my saving grace. God came in and became my father and taught me things, and then he brought people from my church, because the scripture tells us that we as a church family are supposed to take care of the widows and the fatherless and the orphans and it goes through the list, and the poor. And that's what happened for me. Two-parent households, my aunt and my uncle, and then some best friends that I had, they would show me the dynamic of a two-parent home. That's where I would see and I would get the instruction on how a man should operate. And that's what single mothers should be looking for. And I know we got the Jerry Sanduskys and some other names out here that creates the concern of how to let your children go to different places, but there are more people who are great individuals than bad ones out there, and we have to trust that there are amazing people out there, and they have our children in their best interest.
Jerry Sandusky, that's scary. not meant to laugh at anybody, okay, but that's scary.
And he got guilt. I mean, guilty just on Friday. What was it, 43 out of the 45? Something like some crazy number like that. And then his own son said that he molested him too?
Yes, his own son. His adopted son, I believe.
What do you say?
Okay, we've covered a lot of things, but I still got a few more questions.
Okay.
You said your organization gives up financial help. They help reunite families. You give tutoring. What else do you do? You're based in the Atlanta area right now.
Mm-hmm. We have
Georgia
peer groups.
Area.
And then we, what was the other thing? The husband and wife team mentors.
Okay. We talked about the psychological impact to a certain extent. being fathers does have on children. We've talked a little bit about that. Does your foundation assist in ministries to the families who are finding it difficult to stay together?
You mean like husband and wives looking to get a divorce or separate, that kind of thing?
Yeah, like if they go, do you have like a religious setup of some sort, or do they get some type of counseling if they want it?
We are working to implement counseling, and when we reengage with fathers, that's a process. That's not just, hey, here's your dad, here's your child. That is a process of counseling, mediation, as well as an attorney on board, and that's our own little special plan, so I don't want to get into too many details, but we do provide counseling in that setup. It is a ministry, but it's a faith-based ministry that we do for everyone, no matter what faith you are. So they know that I'm a minister. People know that this is ministry for me, but they also know it as a foundation. So I don't really set it up in a way where they know they're coming to hear about Jesus, per se. Do I do speaking engagements? Yes. Do I have churches now, finally? I have one church who's really interested in having me come in. We've been trying to get into churches. It's been an interesting dynamic because you don't hear this conversation as much as you'd like to hear it in the Christian church setting. And it's a real issue that we need to deal with in the church.
Yes, I've heard it said several times in my own church here in Florida that there are just not enough men in the church, but we're glad to have the men that we do have here in the church.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard things said like that, and it would be nice, you know, to have more men in the congregation, but the way everything is going, the way everything is set up, but God is going to take an interference from God. Let's see, if the father is in prison, how do you reunite their children to them, if they're in prison?
I have not been able to reunite any father that is in prison. And number one, either the father or the child comes to me. And most fathers, I've never been able to meet a father that's trying to reunite. I do have a friend who is a child in his own right. He's 40-something, and we are supposed to go to see his father who's been in prison for 25 years and record that because he has some things he needs to say to his father. But we reuniting them, that becomes really difficult based on the process that we do because as much as we want to reunite them into a healthy environment, that becomes
it's
complicated.
Not healthy.
It's not a healthy environment, and then it's how do you get passes? How do you get clearance? How do you get, like, over and over and over again? Our process takes time. This is not something you're going
to
get accomplished in a week.
Biological fathers, am I correct?
Yes, yeah, and if you don't know that, then there's DNA tests. We just started partnering with someone to provide DNA tests for those who aren't sure. And so that's something that becomes really difficult because, yeah, you want them in a decent environment. And I had a conversation with a mom a little while back, and she was saying that her children don't know where their father is. And I thought that was interesting. That she really believed her 8 and I think 10-year-old did not know that their father was in jail. And she justified not taking them to see him based on the fact that they don't know where he is. And I said, you don't think they know where he is or they don't know where he is? And she said, well, they probably overheard me. I said, and she had just discussed how her son had just gotten into trouble because someone had given him a gun, and he's 10. Someone had given him a gun, and he was found with it. And I said, whether you know it or not, your son is going to do everything he can to get to where his father is, that's consciously or subconsciously. And he's already 10 years old being caught with a gun. And she hadn't thought about it like that. He knows where his father is. And that's what we have to be very careful of. If our children know, then we need to take them up there to see them so that they can have that relationship, even in that dysfunctional way to some degree, which could in turn be functional if it's done the right way. But as an organization to get into prisons, that's not
because
something
a lot,
that we
most fathers would tell their children, don't come to where I'm at. Don't do the things that I have did. Don't come to where I'm at the way I have come to be here in prison. If they're just fathers, that's what they're going to say.
That's what they're going to tell them. That's very true. But I do like the fact that we were able, like I said, to do the jail system, but we were doing more of a peer group there where we were talking to them, trying to make sure that when they did leave that jail, that they would go be the best father or go and reach out to their father or help them deal with the fact that I did this crime based on the fact that I'm looking for my father. We were working to do that more than reengaging a child in prison. I had an 8-year-old in my class at one of my Boys and Girls Club peer groups, and we had watched the video, and before I knew it, this young man had his head down on the table. And I asked him why, what was going on, and he said, "I'm 8 years old, and I've never seen my father because my father has been in prison for 8 years."
Okay.
First time I'd ever heard it, because he'd never discussed it before. And that was the moment when he did. And we worked through that. But there was not a moment where his mother was even open enough for the conversation. And that's the piece I got to stress more than anything. Women, if you're out there and you're creating the difficult situation, or you're not communicating and having the open conversation with your children, or you think they're too young and they don't know, they're having the conversation in their head whether you know it or not. And you need to clarify and speak truth to that, because they're coming up with their own assumptions because the mothers aren't talking. And they need that, but they need those answers earlier than you think, at an earlier age than you think.
So the fatherless generation has a foundation. You also done a documentary. Did I understand you right? You said you were filming?
We have. Yeah, well, me filming is not the documentary. We started the documentary in December, January. And as I started filming it, I think the Oscars or something came on, like in February, and God said, "You're shooting too low. You need to think bigger on a grander scale." And so we have now gone back to the drawing board to create something much larger than what we were doing here in Atlanta. We're really going to combine two documentaries that I wanted to do and put them together and create a 7-city tour that discusses this whole epidemic in a different way. So often you hear the negative responses, but there's a lot of people who are successful who have grown up fatherless, and we need to talk to them. And we need to ask them some questions, and that's what we've been doing. But no, I'm filming a talk show that it really has little
show.
To do.
And what's the name of your talk show? What's the name of your talk show? The
Tory J Show. We've named it the Tory J Show against everything that I wanted to do, but that is where we've come back to that over and over again. So it's the Tory J Show. And
where can my listeners go to listen and watch the show?
Well, they will be able to see it on the website to some degree here in the next few weeks. We are now shooting promos in the next couple of weeks, and then we were hoping to have it already shot already, but it has not worked out. Production is a different beast. Things get delayed and pushed back and moved around, but we're going to shoot 36 episodes, and you'll be able to see some of them online, but most of them will be aired here in Atlanta. And then if everything goes according to God's plan, which it looks like
which
it
network?
Is.
Which network in Atlanta?
It's Peachtree TV.
Okay.
Which is CW, I think. I think that's CW, but they call it Peachtree TV after a certain time. But we're going to go and we're going to do syndication, which would be a distribution. So when we come to Tennessee, we could very well be on NBC or ABC. It just depends on which network purchases the licensing for it. And that's the way I want to go. I don't want to be on one specific network at this stage.
Okay.
We want to do the syndicated thing.
Congratulations.
It's the formula that works.
I hope that works out for you. Congratulations, and God bless you.
Sorry, that was my dog. He just barked.
Okay. Okay, you answered all of my questions. Do you accept donations, and what is the name of your website?
We do accept donations, and we have a website that is being worked on, so I think it's down right now. But if they follow us on Facebook.com/The Fatherless Generation Foundation, all of that information is on there. But the website, the original website, is thefatherlessgeneration.org. And it's www.thefatherlessgeneration.org. And if you ever have any questions or you're in the Atlanta area and want to volunteer or want to know what we have going on, you can follow us on Facebook. We're pretty much up to date on that, and we have a Twitter page as well that is We, the letter R, Fatherless, on Twitter. And we do a lot of updates on that and ask questions and have different forums and allow people to participate in those things as well. So that's how you can pretty much reach out to us. And, yes, we do accept donations. That is always the challenge of an organization, especially a foundation, because foundations give money back to other groups, and we're ready to have, scholarships for kids who are wanting to go to private schools or, different schools that cater to what they, they want to specialize in, mm-hmm. and then college yes. students. And so donations uh-huh. are key.
Okay. Have you seen now with your own foundation, I want to call it an organization, but your own foundation, mm-hmm. Have you seen an increase since the recession has started?
I can't say that I have. Even when they did the census, those numbers have still not, I have not seen the new numbers on growing up fatherless, which is interesting to me. And I've asked a few people, where do we find that kind of thing. But we haven't really, those numbers have not come out. And I have been doing peer groups since, 2010. And so the recession hit in 2008. So I can't really answer that question because I do not know.
Okay. With the current president in office, President Barack Obama, and First Lady Michelle Obama, I was reading your bio and Facebook page. You said that as far up as the White House, that it's come down, for fathers to take on more responsibility. That's
mm-hmm.
great. I think that's great. What advice do you have for children, youth who are fathers? What advice can you give the children and youth, and even the mothers who are husbands?
Well,
right now.
Well, for me, the advice that I would give kids is, it's the best example or an amazing example, should I say, is our President of the United States. This is a fatherless gentleman who still will admit that he has his own issues with growing up fatherless, but has achieved so much and is creating a lot of positive change to some degree in a lot of lives. And being growing up fatherless doesn't have to be the end all to who you are. It can just be a part of who you are, and it can cause you to start some amazing things. I love what I do. I think what I do is phenomenal, and not because I do it. I look back and
yes,
I have people tell me that.
It's
a struggle for me. Thank you. It's a struggle for me. Because I know the things that I endure behind closed doors. I know the phone calls I'm making. I know the people I'm begging for money. I know. But when people see the end result, they go, oh, my God, are you kidding me? Like, what you're doing is amazing. But that's based
yes.
on me being fatherless and saying.
That's why I
wanted
you on
that.
My show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You don't have to just be fatherless, and you don't have to just be those statistics. You can be the President of the United States. You can be a successful business owner. You can do whatever it is you desire to do. That's not limited because you're fatherless. If anything, that should cause you to want to push harder and to want to want more. You should want so much more because you've gone through these different adversities. And if you can make it through being fatherless, trust me when I say, baby, you can make it through a whole lot of other things that are out here
yes.
waiting for
yes,
you.
Yes, I agree with you because I grew up without my biological dad. Father,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not where I want to be, but I'm not where I was either. So I thank God. And you're right. Like Ms. Tori J. Evans said, that should give you more, make you want to be an achiever, not necessarily an overachiever, but it should make you want to do better and more. But I know as a child, children cannot understand it, but it doesn't mean that you're a loser or that you're forsaken or that because you don't have a father in your home that you've been forgotten about, because there's still a God up above. There's a higher power.
Yeah.
So, don't hang your head. I know it's hard for a little
9 or 10-year-old girl can understand, but a 16, 15, 16, 17-year-old can understand what I'm saying. A 14-year-old can too. 13-year-old can too. But a child may cannot. But don't hang your head because your dad is not in the home. Because there you have a father in heaven. So keep your dreams high and keep your head up.
Because that's one of the first things God ever spoke to me. And I had this conversation with someone the other day, and they were like, yesterday. She's like, you believe God speaks to you? And we're of different denominations and faiths. And so her faith does not believe that God speaks in this day and age. And I understood her position. Still didn't change the fact that I know that God speaks to me. And at 12, the first thing God said to me was, I am a father to the fatherless. And he said, when your mother and your father forsake you, that I will be there to take care of you. And I was very clear that he said that to me. And I think that was one of the things as well that made me go, okay, there's something more to this. And I don't have to hang my head, and I don't have to be embarrassed at all.
Right. That is correct. And I had to learn that. I'm 41 years old, and I had to learn that. All right, listeners. We've had with us tonight on Show Talk with Angela Lowe, Ms. Tori J. Evans of the Fatherless Generation, who's coming out with a television show. Hopefully it will be on a major network. So you pray, everybody pray for
it.
Oh,
it will be.
Oh, it's definite. Okay.
Oh, it's going to be on a major network. And look for the book. I was just in Jet Magazine, and the person who wrote that article is now partnering with me to write this book and have it done by the time the fall hits. And so
we have some people interested in this book
so that you can know. I'm breaking the silence on what a child feels like growing up without their father and the things that you think about and the things that you endure. And so this is going to be one of a kind.
All right. Okay, congratulations again. Congratulations again. Is there anything you would like to add to the show? We have about a little more than two minutes left. Is there something you'd like to add that hasn't been covered to the show?
No, I think we've covered everything. I hope that they got enough information on who we are, and they can check us out, like I said, on Facebook. You know, go to the Fatherless Generation Foundation and see what we're really doing. We have some great videos out there where you can see our peer groups in action. And if you want to ever email us, we're thefatherlessgeneration@gmail.com. And you can email us and ask questions or anything that you know you want to ask. Or we're not judging. We're not here to judge. We're here to help. And that's the bottom line for me. So I thank you so much for having me on my show, and I wish you much success. I really started out on Blog Talk. I started out on Blog Talk and got a radio show here in Atlanta on a gospel station, and then that created some more stuff, and TV started. So,
well, maybe God will bless me too. Maybe God will bless me too. Looks like He is.
I
thank you, Ms. Tori J. Evans. I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. And can I go? What was the name of your show on Blog Talk Radio? Can I go to some of the old shows and listen to them?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was under CIHI Network. I think it might have been called The Standard with Tori J. It might have been. I'll email it to you because it's been so
long.
All right,
thank you.
And I've tried to access
it
because I don't have the password anymore, but I'll email
it
to you.
And I did not see that Jet Magazine with you in it, but I will go and look for it. Which month was it?
April. I'll email you the link so you can see it. Yep.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And maybe I can get a copy of the documentary and the book for my own personal viewing and my own personal.
I will definitely make that available. I would like a copy of it. So I will make that available if I call you a week from now.
Don't be surprised if I say, hey, Ms. Evans, you said you were going to send
me a
copy.
Well, give me some time. Please give me to the fall. At least give me to the fall to have some of this stuff done. There's a lot of work going on right now.
All right.
So once again,
I thank you.
I am headed to get my workout on and play some tennis tonight before it rains here in Atlanta. So I will talk to you. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
And thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
All right. You have a great night.
All right, listeners. We've had with us tonight Ms. Tori J. Evans. She was a former Blog Talk host, which I'm still one, I'm proud to say. And hopefully God will bless me too. Thank you for tuning in to Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Have a good night, listeners.